My name is Gary Butterfield, he, him.
My name is Kay Ross, she, her.
And you're listening to Best Quality Vacuum. It is the Duck Feed show about Breaking Bad, El Camino, and Better Call Saul.
And this week we broke our podcast, Gary. We broke our podcast talking about 5-0, an episode that was written by Gordon Smith, directed by Adam Bernstein, and it originally aired on March the 9th of 2015.
Yeah, talking about Better Call Saul and all the little mini shows it contains.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is a handoff. The last episode ended with a literal handoff, the point of view from Saul, from Jimmy to Mike. And we're going to learn about his past, why he came to Albuquerque from Philadelphia.
Yeah. We know some details. He was a cop. At one point, he took a half measure when he oughtn't have. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much it. He's got a lot of skills that, seem to have come from somewhere. We get this exposition through a pretty self-contained crooked cop drama. Like, this is resolved in the next episode. Mm-hmm. But Mike is attempting to beat the rap for killing the two police officers who murdered his son, Matty, who was also a cop.
Yeah. And this, to me, this is great. It's a thing that's interesting, though, because the people who I've heard, there's people who get annoyed whenever I bring up anybody else's reaction to the media we're talking about.
Yeah.
Which like sit and spin a little bit, but also like, you know, it's part of the conversation.
Right? Yeah.
And having counterexamples can help you solidify your own opinion on things, you know, compare and contrast. It's a basic verb, right?
It would be really weird to talk about Fly without talking about the discussion that it generated, you know?
Yeah. I think so. Yeah. The people who do not like that Better Call Saul does anything with the cartel, that does anything outside of Jimmy, you know, an argument. I can imagine this episode being frustrating because you're on a Jimmy track. Mm-hmm. You know, it's resolved for now, but we know that it has an ending because we know it's a prequel. We know a lot of stuff has to happen.
Yeah.
Switching gears this rapidly and this completely for a little bit does contribute to the pacing issue of season one, I think. Mm-hmm. And if you were a Jimmy diehard, if you're only interested in Jimmy and Chuck, you know, we didn't leave that in like a perfect space.
No.
I can imagine this feeling momentum killing.
Mm-hmm.
This is the kind of episode on the show that benefits so much from it being a second watch and having expectations be properly set, because being able to enjoy this on its own, just knowing this is going to go somewhere, this is for a purpose, like it's really easy to dine on.
Yeah.
It's really high quality shit about a character that, you know, I wanted to know more about, I liked a lot, didn't necessarily need to know more about, you know, but if you're going to use him, like, why not do this?
Yeah.
You know, it's what elevates Mike from an Easter egg. Mm-hmm. In this series to, you know, this show really could have been called like Albuquerque Origins or something. You know, like, it's almost like the show is a little bit of a misnomer. Saul is the main character by like, he's like 70% of the main character.
Yes.
And then everything else is split.
Yeah. Like, this is where the show becomes about setting the ground for what is going to happen. Like, for what Walt is going to walk into, right? Yeah. And I think broadening this out, I can see this episode being frustrating for somebody who's like, okay, well, it's like, it's all Mike, right?
Yeah.
You get Jimmy as a supporting character in this, and I feel like it's important, but it also, you know, it's like, we're not reaching the point where we're passing back and forth, right? No. And there's kind of like a shared load. So like, if you are watching this like just the first time, or if you're at all bummed out by the cartel stuff or by the Mike focus stuff, you can see like, oh yeah, this is a sign of things to, you know, bad things to come. For me, it's like, oh, this is when it gets interesting. Not that it wasn't interesting before, but I remember watching this and thinking, okay, is it all going to be Jimmy? Like, what are we looking at here? And then realizing that they were going to be doing so much more, widening it out, I was like, oh, okay, now the show feels really justified to me.
It's really useful from a mixed perspective because it allows us to do higher stakes things with characters that are further along in the crime time.
It's very important that nobody really dies in Jimmy's story up until the end.
Yes, exactly. Like, you know, the Tuco stuff felt a little bit like not cheap, but a little bit like, we know we got to get some razzle dazzle.
Yeah.
In there, this is a better execution of razzle dazzle on top of everything else it is. It's not just razzle dazzle, you know, but it is, it's significant. for that. And this is, you know, Mike, all these characters are going to have an arc. Mike and Jimmy and Kim and Gus, ultimately, in terms of their journey through this. One of the things that the Breaking Bad universe is about how different characters can go through the crucible of crimes. Batman's least favorite, you know, hangout spot, and how they change.
Yeah.
Like what you do changes you. Mm-hmm. This is doing two things. Like one, it's showing Mike origins for that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it can be a choice and it does this to you, you know, and he's going to teach that to other characters. He's going to teach that to Pierce and everything. There's also an element of motivating what Mike does and where the show ultimately comes down. You know, when Mike gets his final judgment in the last episodes from Nacho's dad, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You know, Mike's version of, I am going to continue on this road. I'm in the road. I'm going to do good where I can. You know, everybody tends their own garden.
Yeah.
In the moral judgment of this universe does not matter.
No.
You know, and we get to, it's really important that we see the beginning of this from something that is ultimately very sympathetic.
Yes.
Doing a Punisher story.
Uh-huh.
You know, like doing a vigilante story. Like this is something that was good to have happened.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You know, and this idea that Mike is kind of defeated by this, Mike understands it doesn't matter. It's just how things were. He wasn't killing corrupt cops because they were corrupt. Mm-hmm. There's no system to be fixed. It's just how it is. Mm-hmm. He was part of it too. He did it because these motherfuckers couldn't live and he couldn't live with it.
Yeah.
You know, who he is.
It was necessary for his healing, right? Yeah. to not drink himself, you know, into the grave. And also like this, we call this an origin. Like this is not the first time Mike killed. No. And also this is, you know, not the first time he, you know, did something criminal. It's not the first time he was corrupt, right? Like, you know, we kind of learn like, oh, he is still just on this road that started at some point in the past, right?
Yeah. Basically, through being an army sniper, the hidden subtext of Better Call Saul is that the army turns into a killbot. not the alarmist. But the...
or some would call it.
A killbot factory.
Yeah.
But, he has skills that you do not have from being a cop.
Yeah.
Like all his weird agent operator, JC Denton shit has nothing to do with being a cop.
No.
You know, it is implied that before this happened, he did shit like that and that he did a lot more of it between the two series than we know.
Yes.
Yeah. Than we see.
Yeah. This is a weird looking episode at times because in the color coding of the Breaking Bad universe, a flashback is cast in what is almost day for night blue.
Mm-hmm. I think part of the reason they do that is because they need to show that we're not in Albuquerque.
Yeah.
And they're trying to up the winterness of it all.
So it's shot in Albuquerque. Like even in the opening, it has the blue tint. It is him arriving in Albuquerque.
Oh yeah. I suppose that is true.
Yeah.
People get mad about that kind of thing. Same thing people get mad about Mexico being yellow.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's still stylistic to me. It does not bother me.
Yeah. It's stylistic. I guess I just call it out because it is some of the most you see. Yeah. Here, because a lot of this episode is flashback.
Yeah. The writer for this, Gordon Smith, was a writer's assistant on Breaking Bad. This is his first full episode script.
Mm-hmm.
Good for him. He is one of the people we saw talk about writing the Chicks and Guns DVD exclusive scene.
Yeah.
Last season. So he had did a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Had a little bit in here, his first bite of the apple. Pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. Agreed. You know, real great monologues in this.
Yeah.
I'm glad you have this note. There's not a whole lot of production detail or trivia on this, but the fandom wiki, home of the fans, has some trivia where they say, you know, Mike is leaving for the bar. Menchie's heading to Albuquerque. The bartender says tarantulas are common there, and Mike says he'll be on the lookout. And a sleuth on the wiki says that this could be a reference to the tarantula that Drew Sharp found and kept in a jar. I do think if you say tarantula, you are referencing the animal.
Yes. And also
in a platonic way, like it, you know, that is what words do.
Uh-huh.
You know,
now, I didn't listen to the commentary on this one. I don't know if our friend Mr. Smith said, oh yeah, I included that line as a knowing little wink toward the toward the tarantula. That's not how this is phrased. This is somebody really grasping for straws.
It's really silly.
Yeah,
you know, it's just two appearances of Tran. You know, we were forged in the Bonfireside chat minds, but like,
yes, association.
Beg people to fucking kill the word association in your mind. Like, it is good to notice when two things happen, but there's a step after noticing it.
Yeah.
You know, you have to draw the connection. There has to be a connection there. Like, it's just a scary animal that's in the Southwest.
Yeah.
It's a bartender making small talk. Like, in what way are these situations different? Mm-hmm. Or not different? Or are they similar? Like, that you have to watch out for tarantulas. Like, that's to tell you to watch out for the death toll you're going to have.
Yeah.
Old drunk cop I barely know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Just stupid.
Yeah.
Media literacy, fucking try it once.
Kill the association in your head. Don't kill the association. Otherwise, you don't get windy.
Yeah. Don't kill association the band.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it starts off with this teaser, really languid. Mike arrives at the train station, and he is, we don't see why, but he's in pain. He's moving slowly. And a character we saw at the end of the last episode who kind of mad dogged him in the car, Stacy, we're going to find out his daughter-in-law, shows up to greet him. And it's a little bit weird. They haven't talked in a long time.
Yeah.
And he says, hey, I'm going to, you know, use the bathroom. Does the thing you can always do, which is if mm-hmm. the men's room is ever busy and you need to use the women's room, you can just say janitor.
Uh-huh.
They're just bathrooms. get with the times.
They're holes that you shit in. Yes. Yep.
Yeah. We don't need to be precious about this. But he goes in the women's room because he's going to buy a sanitary pad.
Mm-hmm.
There.
Yeah.
And uses it. We find out that he has been shot.
Yeah.
He changes the dressing on his wound.
Yeah. Good little improvised way to do that. And we're still in flashback when we come in from the title sequence where Mike is playing with Kaylee in the backyard. And Stacy, his daughter-in-law, so, you know, is talking about like, yeah, no, she still misses him. Like, she doesn't understand what happened. She still asks where daddy is.
Yeah. We're establishing what this is, reminding us. We knew from Breaking Bad that he has a granddaughter, and we've seen a Stacy before, just barely.
This is a different actress this one. Yeah.
She says, you know, how long are you here? And he's like, I'm here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and listen, you know, I'm better. Like, I'm not like I was. I apologize for taking so long to do this.
Yeah.
You know, and she is skeptical this whole time. Like, you get this sense that there is history here and that she does not completely trust him.
Right.
Yeah. She is not scheming. One of the things I like about this is that later when Mike confronts her, she is acting very rational.
Yeah.
And Mike, you know, we talked about in the episode before, you know, you can't con an honest person. Like, if you're used to the game, you're assuming other people are playing the game.
Right.
You know, Mike can keep it up. Mike can act like Gen Pop in this up until it kind of gets his buttons pushed. And then it's like, what is your fucking game with this?
Yeah. What's your angle?
What's your angle with this? She doesn't have an angle. This is very reasonable. She's assuming she's not surrounded by crooks.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
until she learns at the end that no, actually.
Yeah. Heartbreaking monologue.
Yeah.
What she's hung up on is that Maddie, her deceased husband, acted really different for a few weeks before he died, you know, and Mike's like, I didn't notice. She says, hey, he got a phone call late at night and I was listening in. He was really angry, you know, it wasn't like him and he wouldn't tell me who it was. I think there's something about it. I can't say why. I think it was you.
Yeah. Something like only you could, you know, there's just he would talk to you anytime. He would only talk to you like that. You know, he was worked up. It's pretty important because we're starting to get some details here. Maddie is a saint. Like,
yes. Like, Maddie is ludicrous.
Outside of Kaylee, like the most pure character in the entire Breaking Bad universe.
Somebody forgot about the clerk at Los Pollos
who stands
up to the Salamancas.
Yeah, I forgot about what's his name?
The nerd.
Yeah. Yeah, it's Dave Thomas's son, I think.
That guy's great.
Yeah.
Maddie is ludicrous here. and Mike's like, no, I would have remembered that. Listen, I know what you're doing. Like, you're beating yourself up. You're looking for things you should have noticed. You have to stop that.
Yeah.
You know, you have to move on. The truth of the matter is that Maddie's dead. And that's how it is.
Yeah.
And she gets really cold. She doesn't buy it.
Yeah.
You know, hey, yeah, I guess that's that.
Yeah.
I should go.
And, you know, Mike offers to drop by and take care of Kaylee. He's here. He wants to help, wants to take care of this last remnant of his son. And Stacey just kind of gives him literally the cold shoulder. Like she just kind of turns away, doesn't answer. So there's still a fissure here and this is not resolved. Yeah. It's clear that there's a secret being kept.
Yeah. Stacey's no dummy. Mm-hmm. She doesn't understand crimes, but she knows when she's being lied to.
Right.
Mike's in the cab, and he's about to get in. He notices he's bleeding through his shirt. He looks up the cabbie's name on the license and says, "Hey, do you know this town?" He goes, "Yeah." And he goes, "How well?" And we cut to one of Kay's superpowers, which is remembering the name of the vet. In this, yep. It's not revealed in this episode.
No.
But I've always just called him the vet. I've never remembered Dr. Caldera.
Yeah.
Have you found a fandom thing that compares him to a volcano because he's a gushing surge of support for our people or something like that?
No. No, I've not. Okay. I've not found that. It's a very distinctive name, and I love this character, and I love the performance.
Yeah, he's a nice low key scumbag.
Yeah,
in this.
Yeah, he's a veterinarian who does some street surgery at night. Mm-hmm. You know, and he patches up the bullet wound, and we find out that he doesn't just help criminals. He help them medically. He's a connection. He's almost like a Mr. Smith, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Johnson. Sorry.
Yeah. It's very, he's a street doc, in this. And he's funny. Like it's a fun performance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's like, I can get you these pills. These are basically Vicodin. You know, mm-hmm. I can get you something a little stronger if you don't care if it's not strictly for humans.
Something a little bit more human centric. Yeah.
If you're going to want to get a sling, he's like, you don't have one. He's like, I can get you one of those cones. Yeah. You know, it's very funny.
Yeah. This is played by a comedic actor, Joe DeRosa, is this guy's name. Yeah.
Yeah. He played a very minor part in The Office, is how I know this guy.
Mm-hmm.
Mike initially turns on the Vicodin, and he says an aspirin man, and he takes a couple of them for free.
Yeah.
And he offers him work, and Mike says, I'm not looking for that kind of work.
Yeah.
You know, but thanks.
And this is going to be echoed, a little bit later on, like Caldera sees it. Right. And Mike is denying it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we pan cut to the present. And Mike is in an interrogation room. We've picked up after the end, when the detectives came to get him. They're really disappointed because Mike is just saying, I want a lawyer. He's not going to talk to them, cop to cop. Like one of them even says figured you would, do it as a professional courtesy, since we're all cops here. Mike kind of sees that.
Yeah. There's the young cop, and this is because Mike knows this young guy is a scumbag. Presumably,
yeah.
It's a corrupt precinct. There's the older cop he gets along with better. We're going to see them interface more.
Yeah.
He just keeps saying lawyer, lawyer, lawyer. Eventually, hands over Jimmy's card.
Mm-hmm.
Jimmy shows up. Very funny scene. The older cop goes, you look like Matlock. And he goes, no, I look like young Paul Newman dressed like Matlock. Very funny.
The delivery on, it's like, wait, what's wrong? You look like Matlock.
You look like Matlock. And then he also says, say hello to Barney Fife. Wrong show. Thanks for playing. Like, I would watch a little miniseries that just this older detective and Jimmy.
Yeah.
Getting TV Land references wrong at each other.
And Jimmy goes into the interrogation room to talk to Mike alone. Yeah, what's the matter? Didn't give the mayor enough stickers?
Love that.
Putting together the world building in this hierarchy that the parking lot attendant at the courthouse answers only to the mayor.
Or and also that stickers are a universal currency. Uh-huh. Like you can use stickers for anything.
Yeah.
He has to give stickers to the mayor.
Uh-huh.
That's where he collects all the stickers for the month and tithes them.
Uh-huh.
So Mike had Jimmy pick up a cup of coffee. He gives it in there and he goes, no, that's not for me. That's for you. Listen, this younger detective is going to have a notebook. When we get up to go, I need you to accidentally spill this on the younger detective. Mm-hmm. And Jimmy sees through it immediately.
Yeah.
The reason why you do that is because you want to pinch it.
Yes. He mentions the notebook, talks about, creating a distraction. And Jimmy, takes exception saying like, hey, I'm just going to play this straight up, straight up the middle. Right.
Yeah.
Mike says, oh, well, you owe me, for that assist that I gave you with Varga. And Jimmy says, no, no Juan Valdez bump and dump.
Yeah. This idea that, Jimmy is obviously responsible for, everyone's responsible for what they do.
Yeah.
Jimmy is consistently put in a situation where he's begging to just be a lawyer.
Yes.
Like almost literally
mm-hmm.
begging criminals to let him just be a lawyer.
Yeah.
And they never allow it. You know, in this case, he's not literally coerced. Other times he's going to be coerced through, you know, death.
Yeah.
You know, he wants very badly to be on the straight and narrow. Like, it's part of the reason why I'm so sympathetic to Jimmy in this, despite everything he does.
Yeah.
You know, despite generally liking Howard.
Mm-hmm.
The detectives come in. They're here looking at the Hoffman and Fenske thing. And Jimmy says, give us the full story.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm talking Book of Genesis.
Book of Genesis. I love this. He's like, you don't know. He's like, this may surprise you. Despite his bon vivant personality, Mike is somewhat taciturn. great.
So they break it down for him. Mike's son, Matt, was a policeman at the precinct, just like Mike. Hoffman and Fenske and Matt responded to a call at a drug den, and there was a shootout. Maddie died and the gunman got away.
Mm-hmm. Yep, they had no leads. However, Hoffman and Fenske turned up dead in Nicetown.
It's more of a peninsula.
I love Nicetown. Yeah. I don't know. Call it something like Love Day. That's stupid. It looks like an ambush.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so their theory is Hoffman and Fenske were on the take, and that got Maddie killed.
Yeah.
You know, they're just looking for any information, if you know, what Hoffman and Fenske were into. You know, and Mike says, why, or Jimmy says, why would you ask my client? And the older detective says, this is a Hail Mary.
Yeah.
You know, we got nothing, you know, and Mike does cooperate with them once his lawyer's there. The reason why he wanted a lawyer there wasn't because he was afraid of accidentally incriminating himself. He can do this fine. It's because he needed the coffee stunt.
Yes.
You know, and he says, you know, I don't know very much about him. You know, I was at the cop bar, this night of the killing, but I didn't notice any details. You know how I was back then.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they weren't my people.
Right. You know, I was probably at O'Donoghan's or Murphy's, probably Murphy's.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, so the younger detective asks Mike, well, like, it's kind of suspicious that these guys turn up dead and you leave for Albuquerque the next day. Mike says, I didn't hear that they were killed until I was, you know, past Kansas City. Like, he'd already made the decision to go. This wasn't him skipping town to run.
Yep. Even though we're going to find out, obviously premeditated.
Right.
At the end of the business, Jimmy spills the coffee on the younger guy and Mike goes to pat it off him, lifts the notebook. Mm-hmm. I love watching this series in retrospect when you know a pickpocket will happen because you can see it.
Yep.
you can see the rice and cigarette. You can see the cell phone battery, all that stuff. It's great.
Yeah. Yeah. Jimmy decided to, you know, to do this because of something unchangeable about him that everybody can see, but he can't.
Yes.
But also because, you know, he gets the sense, I mean, when they're talking out in the car later, is like, hey, I don't know if you noticed, but they think they're trying to get you on this.
Yeah.
Right.
And he knows people. Like he believes there are gray areas to the law.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he knows this guy not to do this for no reason.
Yeah.
You know, if he did this. He says, you know, how'd you know I'd spill that coffee? And Mike just laughs.
Yeah.
You know, we don't get a full answer from that.
Yeah.
Back at the house, we have Mike going through the notebook. And it's full of details about his movements.
Yeah.
You know, it's like they're actually pretty watching him pretty closely. And he finds out that Stacy called him and he loses his composure.
Yeah.
We don't get Mike losing his composure very often in the series.
No.
Yeah.
This is under his skin. He calls Stacy saying, hey, we need to talk. And he shows up. And, you know, confronts her. He's like yelling at her.
He's scary.
Like,
during this. Yeah.
Yeah.
You called the cops.
Mm-hmm. Why in the world would you do that?
Yeah. And she says, you know, I thought it might help catch his killers. Like I'm being a citizen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he says, you know, did you tell him he was dirty? How could you do that to your husband, to the father of your child?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and she basically lays it out. Like she found money. She found $6,000 in the lining of a suitcase. And she didn't come, and Mike says, why didn't you come to me? And she didn't because he was an unstable drunk.
Yeah.
You know, during that time, you were drinking yourself into unconsciousness, acting like you're the only one who lost him.
Yeah. Grieving in a very selfish manner.
Yeah.
Right. You know, and she says like, hey, you know, like, listen, you've got this thing about him being dirty. I don't care if he was dirty. I just want the people who killed him to be, you know, to be brought down.
Yeah.
You know?
And Mike is caught up on this. Maddie wasn't dirty.
Yeah.
And she goes, well, just fucking tell me then.
Mm-hmm.
You know, tell me about that call. I know it was you. And he, you know, that was between me and my son.
Yeah.
And he can't handle it. You know, my son wasn't dirty and leaves.
Yeah.
And then we see what happened. We get the flashback of, and this is, in addition to this just being good character stuff and leading to a really great monologue, is just pure like Breaking Bad operator shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
God, I love watching like a Shadowrun.
Yep.
I love a well-planned thing.
I mean, a crime procedural is very good as it's distinct good. From a legal procedural, right? I want to see how this happened. I want there to be a reveal. I want to not understand something at first and then have it put into context by a later reveal. Yep. Yeah.
It's basically the main thing that this series does.
Yes.
You know, it's one of the best pleasures of this. Mm-hmm. You know, a police procedural can be fun. Crime procedural, though, that's fucking...
Oh, it's one of the highest forms of art that there can be.
Yeah. Love a heist, even if the heist is very small.
Yes.
You know? You know? So Mike breaks into a cop car and plants a gun in the back seat. We don't see what he plants. We're going to find that out later.
Yeah. He breaks into the car by doing this little trick with some string with a little knot in it. This only works if you have one of those old style cars with a little peg you pull out to unlock it.
Yeah. Which they would, like an old Crown Vic, like an old police car.
Yeah.
He's in the bar drinking, and he keeps staring at Hoffman and Fenske.
Yeah.
They're playing Hold On Loosely. Great song.
Mm-hmm.
Out here. And he needs to push
him a
little
bit. I'm glad
you agree. Yeah. Hold On Loosely is great. Yeah. He has to push him a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So he goes up to him, you know, grabs him in a hug, you know, my brothers.
Mm-hmm.
And he says under his breath, he's like, I know.
He gives
I know
him the,
it was you.
He gives him the Fredo.
Yeah. Fredo's him, you know. And he drinks until the bar is closed. He's got to do the act. Like, he's not getting shit-faced drunk.
No, no.
Even though he is in the depths of his alcoholism, this is after his moment of clarity.
Yes. So he's drinking, but he knows his line, right?
Yeah.
You know?
As he's about to go out to his car, you know, the bartender says, let me give you a cab. He says, no, I stole my car. I'm walking. Tomorrow I'm going to Albuquerque. And the bartender looks at the camera and goes, stay sharp.
Yep.
For tarantulas.
don't leave your doors. Draw
any conclusions, but stay sharp for tarantulas.
Don't leave your doors ajar.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, oh, I wish you're going to Chicago, that toddling town. He just says, look out for tarantulas. You know that.
Yeah. 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 Just talking about an unpleasant feature of a faraway space, the presence of tarantulas.
Yeah. Hoffman and Fenske pick him up. They've been waiting. You know, and they rough him a little bit. They force him into the car, frisk him. They take his gun out.
Yeah.
You know,
and they're doing some business here. Like, you know, trying to do some, just cop talk. Oh, it's colder than my ex-wife's tit out here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tits ain't cold.
No, come on.
They, they ask him like, hey, what, you're talking some shit back there. What'd you mean? Mm-hmm. You know, back there. And again, he knows he has to push him. Like, his point is to get them to act.
Yes.
At this point, he's, you know, so, you know, you killed Maddie. You know, you killed him for nothing. You killed him because you were scared about what he might do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you staged the shooting and I'm going to prove it.
Yeah.
You know, he wants to put them in a position where they have no choice.
Mm-hmm. You push a cop into the situation. They're going to look for a way out of it. You make them dangerous. Yeah.
He's also saying something he wanted to say.
Yes.
Like, this is true. Like, the, you know, you killed him and you killed him for nothing. Mm-hmm. Like, this is senseless. That is part of the tragedy of this whole thing to Mike.
Right. Yeah. So they drive him to an alley and Mike pockets the gun that he planted before. And they pull him out of the car and, like, just have him kind of stand in there, and they walk off to the side to, you know, plan things out. You know, just, okay, well, yeah, no, he was just so ruined over his, you know, over the death of his son that he finally, you know, killed himself.
Old man eats his gun.
Yeah. Happens every day.
Accent. Yeah. They don't really have like a Philly accent in this.
No.
It's funny.
Yeah. And Mike cuts in as they're in the middle of, you know, premeditating this. And he says, smart. That's what I would have done if I were you.
It's great. Yeah. Great line. Shoots him. One of the cops draws to fire on him, but it's empty. He took the gun from Mike.
Yeah.
Mike had emptied out his gun because he knew this because he's so fucking cool.
Yep.
He's the Batman of crime. Mike shoots both of them. The one of them gets a shot off on Mike, and he finishes him off before he can say anything or crawl away.
Yeah. Yeah. Ice cold.
Yep. And we go back to, you know, presumably this is him telling a little bit, like probably not in as much detail.
Yeah.
But telling his daughter-in-law this. He has come clean. We've jumped forward.
Yes.
He was furious and was leaving, and now he's back and he's talking to her.
Right. You know, you took a taste, so did everyone else. That's how you knew you were safe. You know, just you let some things slide. Evidence goes missing. You know, maybe not all of the cash comes back. It's like killing Caesar. Everybody does it. It's mutually assured destruction.
Yep. And obviously this, you know, you bust a drug dealer who has more money than you'll ever see in your life, obviously shadowing Walt.
Yes.
Or, you know, paralleling Walt. And he says, you know, Matt was the only one in this precinct who wasn't dirty. Mm-hmm. You know, I was dirty too. Like you basically did it. You go along to get along.
Mm-hmm. The delivery that you go along to get along.
Yep. Go along to get along. Something that's only ever portrayed as something horrible to do, but it actually works out pretty well in real life.
You know,
going along to get along works out most of the time.
And smoothing stuff over is generally good in a situation.
I like getting along.
Yeah.
Yofensky corrupted Hoffman when Hoffman was young, and Hoffman, as like an olive branch, tried to enlist Maddie.
Yes.
You know, and he says, you know, Maddie did what you think. He agonized over it.
Yeah. You know, and he went to Mike asking what to do, saying like, hey, I'm thinking of turning them into internal affairs, right? Like, I don't know if you realize what's going on at this precinct. It's nuts out there.
Yeah. And Stacy's like, oh, you know, that's why they killed him. And Mike says, listen, you know, the thing a cop fears most, more than dying, more than anything else, is prison. Mm-hmm. You know, being in there with the people they locked up. If you threaten a cop with that, you make them dangerous.
Yeah.
Like, even looking like you might go to internal affairs is bad.
Yeah.
And this is where Mike starts to break down. You know, he says, I told him to take the money. Mm-hmm. You know, do something with it. And Matt wouldn't listen.
Yeah.
You know, my boy was stubborn. My boy was strong, and he was going to get himself killed.
Yeah.
And because Maddie wouldn't listen, Mike played a card he didn't want to play.
Yeah. You know? And he said, listen, everybody there is dirty. I'm dirty too. And this was the phone conversation where Maddie was so angry, the one after which he was different, right?
Yeah. You know, he put me up on this pedestal and I had to show him that I was down in the gutter with the rest of them. Broke my boy. It's very sad. Great monologue.
Yeah.
You know, so Matt, and the tragedy of all this being so senseless, again, you killed him for no reason. Matt did it. Matt went for the money.
Uh-huh.
You know, he convinced him. He did the thing, but he hesitated. And that was enough for Hoffman to think, no, this guy's going to go to internal affairs.
Right. You know, even hesitating is enough, right? You know, I got Maddie to take the money and they killed him 2 days later. He was the strongest person that I ever knew. I was the only one that could make him debase himself like that. And it was for nothing. I made him lesser. I made him like me, and the bastards killed him anyway.
Yeah. Great stuff. Great performance, you know.
Yeah.
Jonathan Banks, national treasure.
Yeah. And you know, getting back to like the, you know, just like, okay, well, here is Maddie. So pure that even just the proximity of this kind of stuff, you know, having his heart broken about his dad was enough to doom him, right?
Yeah. Yep. Could not bring him down far enough.
Yeah.
You know. And Stacy says, you know, if Hoffman and Fenske killed Maddie, who killed them? And I love Mike kind of sobers up at this. Mm-hmm. You know, he says, you know what happened. The question is, can you live with it? He's basically, in the terms of power, she has already contacted the police.
Yeah.
You know, and there's a confession. Mm-hmm. Like he's saying, you know, I don't think he thinks that Stacy is going to turn him in, but he has gone through the emotional arithmetic of accepting that that's possible and it would be okay if it happened.
Yeah.
You know, at this point.
But both of them already have what they want now. Right. Yep. All Stacy wanted was justice for Maddie, right? And Mike is kind of dangling in front of her. Does the revenge that I took count as justice to you?
Yeah. Is this good enough? All my cards are on the table. What do you want to do?
Yeah.
You know, really great stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, really, really good character work. It's not that Mike's character wasn't fully filled in before. Like we had such a good idea of Mike, but there's something... you know, for me, of allowing this character and this actor to kind of flex in this that I really like too.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, giving Jonathan Banks this monologue, like you have to put him in situations like this to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just the sheer artistry of it that I like watching.
Yeah.
You know, that would justify it even on its own, even if I didn't feel like there were parallels and other things that kind of like dovetailed with the themes of the greater series, which I think there are. But even if that wasn't true, I just like watching, you know, a craftsman fucking kill it.
Yeah. You know? He gets up there, he knocks it out of the park. Yeah, absolutely. And like, you know, even if this is extraneous, even if he was, you know, filled out before, this is starting a new series. We need to get him back to kind of like a zero point, right? We need to know what his starting point is. Just like we know that Jimmy's starting point was trying to recover from being Slippin' Jimmy, right? Wanting to impress his brother, all of this. We needed to know what his starting point was. But like, of any character from the original series, to get this kind of treatment, Mike is the one who has earned it most, I think.
Yeah. Mike, and I think, you know, Gus is also very interesting, and it's interesting how they keep us a little bit more at a arm's length with Gus.
Yeah.
Gus develops less, even though we're going to see some stuff. They still keep Gus a little bit more of a mystery.
We never learn what happened in Santiago.
Yeah. Like, we're never going to kind of get there. Gus is further along on the road and has less humanity left.
Yes.
You know, Gus is far enough along that it is going to be very hard to sympathize with him. Like, obviously, the things that happened to his partner suck. Mm-hmm. It's harder to sympathize with him than it is Mike. Really, really good stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not going to turn down the opportunity to see somebody pop some dingers. Like, you know, I don't know. Yeah, pop some dingers, man.
Yeah, man.
Go for Jonathan it. Banks. Like, you spent your whole career playing, like, weird tough guys. You probably didn't get that much opportunity to do this shit. Mm-hmm. Kill it. Slay, queen.
Playing emotionally vulnerable tough guy, buddy.
Yeah. Great stuff.
Love it.
Yeah. The guy's old. It's going to be sad when we lose him. What can people do?
Well, if you're listening to this, you can support us on Patreon. That's patreon.com/duckfeedtv. There you can kick us a few bucks a month and get a whole bunch of extra content and listen to our other shows and spread the word for us.
Yeah, we would really appreciate it. You can also leave us ratings and reviews on Apple Podcasts, Podcast Addict, wherever you find podcasts. Tell your friends, write about us on the message boards and such, and join us in thanking our producer, Gwen.
Thank you so much, Gwen.
Yeah. And until next time, don't break your boys.
Don't break your boys. Watch out for Maddie. He seems like a real drag. Just keep an eye on the Maddies in your life.
Fun to hang out with Maddie.
No.
No. Like, what? Like, also, Stacey doesn't seem like she has hobbies or anything.
No, her hobby is extorting Mike.
Yeah, she eventually gets a hobby, I guess. Yeah. You know, but when Maddie was, you know, that's the ultimate gift that Maddie gave to her.
A pay pig?
Yeah. Father-in-law pay pig. Father-in-law pay pig.